In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tugy Entertainment or its partners.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Hey, and welcome to Officer Radio, brought to you by Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. Today, we'll be talking about contemporary use of force, force options, how it's evolved, and how the mainstream media seems to delight in misinterpreting things, sensationalizing them, blowing them out of proportion, showing little tiny segments of reality, and making big deals out of stuff that if they showed the entire picture, wouldn't be a big deal. Excuse me. Joining me on today's show will be Police Officer Steve Forges. Steve's been a guest on the show before, and we appreciate having him come back. He puts up with me well, and I do appreciate that. He's made himself available several times. Please bear with me today if you hear me cough or make any other rude noises, as I just did coughing. I'm coming off a cold still, and I'll do my best to cover my microphone if I feel any of that coming on. You might hear the cough drops rattling around in my teeth as well. Throughout the show, we'll be taking calls from listeners. The number to dial is 866-404-6519. That's 866-404-6519. Don't be shy. Call on in. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, please don't hesitate to dial it up. If for some reason you are uncomfortable calling, but you still want to make a comment, send me an email. The email address is frankborelli@officer.com. That's frankborelli@officer.com. And I'll check that several times throughout the show and respond as I can. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page. To find it for reference or future listening, just look up on your screen at the blue navigation bar and you'll see the link for Officer.com Radio right next to the link for our podcast library. You might want to bookmark that page as some of our future shows are going to focus on training issues and might serve as good reference material. At least we hope so. The archive shows are also available on iTunes, so you can search us out there to download them. If you need to know what date has what topic, look at our podcast page. You can find the date related to the topic, and then you can pick out the date you want on the iTunes page or in the iShop, whatever the heck it is, iTunes store. There you go. As you hopefully well know, Officer.com has both a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed. Any updates we plan for this radio show, scheduled guests, etc., will be posted and tweeted accordingly. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. So, with all that out of the way, let's dive into today's show about use of force. Now, we started talking about contemporary use of force, but contemporary means today. And today is drastically different from what it was 50 years ago or 150 years ago. Plenty of us have seen movies about the Old West where marshals had two tools, a revolver and a long gun, whether it was a shotgun or a rifle. And they used those tools for everything. They either shot you with it or they hit you with it. And that was their entire use of force. You either did what you were told or you got hit or you got shot. It was a lot simpler back then. We look back 50 years, and I'm guessing because 50 years ago was 1962, and I wasn't quite a gleam in my daddy's eye yet, but we had revolvers for most agencies, shotguns certainly, nightsticks or wooden batons, depending on what you want to call them. And I guess in some places, leather blackjacks or saps, a lead weight surrounded by black leather that could be used to hit people. Again, still a limited number of options. I guess mace might have been around or was still coming on, but not a lot of options on the use of force continuum. You still were either going to do what you were told, you were going to be compliant, or you were going to get hit, or you're going to get shot. there weren't a lot of options in between. Now, if an officer was skilled with his hands or her hands, and there certainly were female officers in the 1960s, early 1960s, they weren't as prevalent in law enforcement as they are today. And today, I still don't think they really account for much more than 20% of our law enforcement community. And that's not a criticism. It's just, as far as I know, what the data reflects is that the female population in law enforcement is about 20%. So when you look back, if a man was really good with his hands, woman was really good with their hands, if they were good at fighting, then they had other force options in that they knew control holds, or they knew pressure point tactics, or they knew something besides pull out a stick and hit you, pull out a gun and shoot you, if they couldn't talk you into doing what they wanted you to do. So how different are things today? Well, today we have multiple different force options that include less lethal and non-lethal options like OC spray, which has been a big deal in the news lately, and we'll talk about that later in the show. Expandable batons, which offer pressure point control tactics as well as use as an impact tool. We have electronic control devices such as those from Taser and Stinger, which can be 100% incapacitating but not lethal. Yes, I know somebody out there is going to argue and say, oh, the Taser kills people. As far as I know, there has yet to be a documented, upheld, coroner-supported case where the deployment of a Taser, absent any other circumstance, just being exposed to a Taser, killed somebody. Now I'll tell you all this, and I don't work for Taser. I don't sell for Taser. I don't sell anything. I am a Taser instructor. I have been shot with a Taser, and I don't mean I've had the probes put in my pocket in my shoe. I've been shot with a Taser and taken that ride. Does it hurt like heck? Oh, yeah, it does. Does it hurt forever? No, it hurts for the length of the exposure, and there might be some muscle soreness after the fact. And as the show producers commented, I'd really rather be tased than shot. Tasers don't kill you. Shooting gives a good chance. Well, there's a better chance you can die if we shoot you than if we tase you. But going back, we have OC spray, we have tasers, we have impact weapons. Today's world, we have less lethal options that include rubber bullets, different types of impact or energy delivery, kinetic energy delivery weapons such as beanbags, items that are launched from 37 or 40 millimeter launchers. We have a plethora of options available to us today, but what we have to go along with that is this increased analysis, this under-the-microscope effect that we operate with every day because of personal media devices such as cell phones that have video recording capability or just picture capability, the immediate access anybody has to deliver information through the internet. You know, back in the day, in the 1960s, early 1960s, 50s, 40s, whatever, back in the 70s and 80s, if a police officer did something wrong, it was a rare moment that a photographer caught that officer in the act. If the officer did something right, it was an even more rare moment because that didn't make news. When they did get caught in the right, it was still a miracle if somebody got a picture of it. In today's world, cops are caught doing right all the time. You think about how many officers work how many hours daily, weekly, monthly, annually, and never get a complaint. And what makes the news? One officer with a fog unit of OC in his hand for 10 seconds. In the overall scheme of things, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, and we will get to it later. I'm talking about the UC Davis incident. We'll get to that in a bit. But right, wrong, or indifferent, that 10 seconds with one officer represents such a small percentage of actual use of force of officers nationwide for a year that it's ludicrous for the mainstream media to blow it out of proportion. So why do they do it? Well, folks, they do it because they sell advertising. And the more eyeballs they can put on a screen, the higher the advertising rates they can charge. So if they sensationalize things, if they blow them out of proportion, if they make them a big deal, if they make news, about their opinion, about somebody else's captured content from 2 seconds out of a 20-minute event, then they can make more advertising revenue. And that's what it boils down to. I want to give you an example. The Casey Anthony case. And as bad as I feel for the little girl, why was it national news? And then why did so many other news agencies or news channels pick it up? And then why did the trial become news? And what happened after the trial? Now we've got a woman there reporting on what happens to her. And it's news because they made it news. The mainstream media blew it up and made it a news event. If they hadn't, nobody would have ever heard about it. None of us would care. And I submit to you that those of you who are out there living your every moment just waiting for the next tidbit about that case, you need to move on with your life. It's like reality television, guys. It's not reality. It's what the television stations are creating. And if that's what you're living your life around, then we have challenges. Well, you have challenges. I don't have challenges because, thankfully, I'm not addicted to reality television. It peaked with Cops, and that got old really fast. When you've done the job, watching people do it on television is just not the same. Getting back to the use of force options, we've changed our situation where nightsticks now collapse, so they're easier to keep on your belt. Flashlights, tactical flashlights, are now much smaller, handheld size, rather than being the big, essentially second nightstick that you leave in your car because you forgot it most of the time. Things have changed so that they empower the officer better to have all of his tools with him when he gets out of the car. A while back we did a show about communication, and we talked about how they used to have to get out of a car to go to a call box, or even before that to use a phone inside of a business. Now people have a radio on their belt and a shoulder mic, and they just turn their head, push a button, and you know, they can talk, and the dispatcher can talk back to them, or they can talk to their partner can talk back to them. Communication's instant. Having our entire use of force continuum available to us on our person is now a reality, but accompanying it are video recorders, audio recorders, items that capture what we do and what we say, how we do it and how we say it. And if even if everything we do is right, if we say something rude or disrespectful or even remotely not courteous, then we can get criticized for that. So as we come up on our first break in the show, again, I want to encourage you to call in if you'd like, 866-404-6519. And we'll bring Steve Forges, our guest, in after the break to talk about contemporary use of force. Thank you for joining us. Talk to you in a minute.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Hey moms, juggle your hats with our mom of many hats, Angie Mozzillo. Friday afternoons at 5 Eastern, 4 Central on the Mom to Mom Network. Moms are always juggling their hats. And sometimes it's easy for moms to forget their value when life calls for switching from role to role. But the ability to juggle so many hats is priceless. She is never just a mom. She's a decision maker, coordinator, creative genius, counselor, a friend, an authority, and a leader in her household. On Mom of Many Hats Radio, we'll be talking about the hats that you as a mom juggle. We'll acknowledge your importance and support in helping you and all moms to not just defend your value, but to believe in your value. For more on the show and Angie, check out her website, azmamaminihats.com. She is a strong woman. She is powerful. She is wonderful. And she is valuable. Mom of Many Hats with Angie Mozzillo. Friday afternoons at 5 Eastern, 4 Central on the Mom to Mom Network. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com, and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome back. I'm sorry you caught me reading a post from a police officer friend of mine in North Carolina. Bless this lady's heart. She works, what do we call it, Steve? Second shift. She goes to work at 1,500 hours, 3 in the evening.
Right.
Typically, she gets home. She's supposed to get off at 3 in the morning. She works 12-hour shifts. Sometimes she gets home then. Sometimes she doesn't. Steve knows how that works. She usually gets to bed about 6 a.m. Apparently, three of her friends this morning decided that they absolutely positively had to call her before noon. And anybody who's ever been a cop, worked second or third shift, can tell you that sleeping during the day is a very difficult thing to do. And so she had to share her story, and she said, listen, since the majority of the people I'm friends with, and then she goes on to describe what that is, she says that I know you're intelligent enough to grasp emergency versus non-emergency, so I'm going to assume if you call me prior to noon, you're having an emergency. And if you don't leave a message, I'm going to assume you're incapable of speech. So instead of calling 911, you called me. So I'm going to show up at your place and stomp you out because you're either on fire, choking on something, or needing pulling back from wherever, whatever world you are in where you're the most important thing there. Laura, thank you very much for brightening my day. This needed to be said. So help me God, I want to post this as a blog on officer.com. It's funny as heck. Anyway, all right, welcome back to the show about contemporary use of force. Steve, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Very good, thank you.
How many people have called you and woke you up and you wanted to just go stomp the heck out of them?
Oh, countless people.
It never ceases to amaze me. But anyway.
Exactly.
When did you get into law enforcement, Steve, without giving away how ancient you are, because you're not as ancient as I am? When did you get into law enforcement?
In the early 90s.
In the early 90s. I got you by about a decade. What were your first use of force tools when you went out there? What was your – give me your list, your entire use of force continuum that you had with you.
Handgun, of course, and pepper spray, and an expandable baton.
Okay. No electronic control device.
No.
No blackjack or SAP or any of that?
No. Electronic devices were around, but my agency didn't use them.
Okay. Yeah, Taser's been around a lot longer than most people think. In the early 90s, they were those big, ugly M26s that looked like even uglier Glocks.
Even before that, it was the little stun device that you had to, you know, doing drive stuns with them. You know,
They didn't shoot probes out?
No.
Which meant you had to get up close and personal.
Right, and they weren't as effective.
You had to feel the love, as we say.
Right.
Okay, well, way back before my day, way back before your day, when cops had just nightsticks and revolvers and maybe shotguns or rifles, their use of force continuum wasn't quite as expanded. I remember in 1986... when I entered civilian law enforcement, I actually was issued a revolver and a blackjack, a canister of mace, and a polyurethane baton that did not collapse, and a mag light that held 6 C-cell batteries that was the same size as my nightstick. I never hardly even took my nightstick out of my car. I just put the flashlight in my nightstick ring to go do whatever I needed to do. Do you remember any of that stuff?
Oh, I certainly do. Back when I started out, you know, it was the D cells, and they also had the Meglite rechargeable that was about the same size as a 3D cell that I ended up getting just because it was so much brighter. You didn't have the expense of buying batteries constantly, you know, but they were big and heavy, unlike what we have today.
Well, but we've solved a problem too, and we'll get into that in a little bit. So you never got issued a blackjack or a SAP or any of that?
No.
Okay. They actually got the agencies that I worked with and around actually outlawed them or banned them after a while. And some of the quote-unquote old-timers, the guys that had been there for a decade before me, man, they hated giving them up because they were very effective.
Right.
But, you know, that was back in the day, too, where if you hit somebody in the head, it wasn't considered a lethal force attack. It was you hit them in the head. If you were trying to kill them, you'd have shot them. You know, and I can't remember exactly when that changed, but I know in the early 90s when I was taking – in the late 80s when I was taking PR-24 class, hitting somebody with a baton in the head, the sternum, the neck, or the groin was considered a lethal force attack. Is that what you were taught back then?
Yeah, the same protocols.
So and as a guy who's been kicked in the groin more than my fair share of times, hit in the head, had a bullet ricochet off my head, certainly hit in the neck, been hit in the solar plexus and the sternum, I'm not dead. I understand how it can be a lethal force attack, but in my world, you got to work really hard to kill somebody hitting them any of those places except in the head. And even still, if you hit them in the head, you got to hit them pretty hard. Would you agree?
Oh, I certainly would. Your head can take a lot.
Not that either one of us has ever tried to kill somebody by hitting them in the head with a baton. Let's clarify that.
Right. I could see where if it's repeated strikes one after another into the head and some of the other regions, that it could potentially be lethal. But a single strike generally isn't going to cause death.
Right. And I won't make any comment about how it can do brain damage and stuff like that, because then we get into the whole conversation about criminals and brain damage, and we're going to leave that alone. Yeah. But this is indicative of how things were for me about 23, 24 years ago. For you, 20 years ago, you got in the early 90s. Certainly, just the impact weapons have evolved a long way. Nightsticks are no longer wooden nightsticks. They're not even polyurethane sticks now. Largely, we have aluminum collapsible friction lock batons that allows us to keep them on our belt and have it with us at all times. I can't tell you how many times I've seen how many cops, when we used to have nightsticks or PR-24s, and they get out of their car and leave it hanging in their cage or beside their seat or whatever. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. And they were constantly being left in the car. They were large and cumbersome and banging into your leg and banging into everything that's wherever you went.
Yeah, I know an awful lot of cruisers had dings and dents in the doors because cops ran into them with various nightsticks or radios or whatever and didn't mean to. But like you said, today's radios are flashlights are a lot smaller. We've made all the tools easier to carry, which to some extent makes them harder to misuse. I mean, today's tactical flashlight using the 2 3-volt lithium batteries that's a little bit longer than the palm of your hand is wide. Certainly, you can use that to hit somebody, but it's not going to be used like the old mag lights were. You see people swinging them over their shoulder, hitting people in the head or clavicle or whatever. Today's tactical lights just can't be used with the same effect.
Correct.
Not, again, that either one of us has tried. But it allows us to keep the tools on our body, which is very important when we get out of the car. When you get out of a cruiser, for those folks who aren't in law enforcement that might be listening, when you get out of the car without a flashlight, without an impact weapon, without OC spray, without a taser, without anything that you might need, and then you end up having to get into a use of force situation where you could have used that, you're left in a circumstance where you've got to explain why you didn't have it, and you can almost get jammed up just for that. Steve, let me ask you this. When you said you came on in the early 90s, you were issued OC spray?
Yes, I was.
Okay. OC spray, for the people who don't know, oleoresin capsaicin, depending on who you're talking to and how they say it. It's pepper mace, folks. It's an organic product. It's micro-pulverized pepper, and it's usually delivered in a non-flammable carrier, although some of the earlier ones did have a flammable carrier, and that was a bad thing. There were cases where somebody get doused with OC spray and then shot with a taser and their clothing would catch on fire. That was bad. Doesn't happen anymore. The stuff's been tested, cross-tested, all that good stuff. Did you ever have mace, Steve?
No.
Okay. No. Mace is a chemical irritant, and I did actually get issued mace back in the late 80s before OC spray became the rage. And when OC spray came out, I became an OC spray instructor. And for all y'all out there who think it's hell and it just kills people, I've been sprayed in the face with OC a lot more than one time. I'm still here. It hurts like hell. Quite honestly, I'd rather be in training. I'd rather be shot with a taser than sprayed with OC. But on the street, I'd rather get the accidental exposure to the OC than hit with the taser. What's your take on that, Steve?
I would agree completely. Yeah, because the taser completely incapacitates you, whereas with the OC spray, you can still fight. You know, and you know, at that point, all you're concerned about is surviving that encounter. You know, if you're getting exposed to, you know, a taser, you're doomed.
Right. Well, I tell you, you don't, you're not familiar with MACE, and MACE being either CN and CS, CN or CS based, it's something that grew out of military usage of chemical weapons. And having been in the Army and going through the gas chamber, I can tell you it totally sucks to have to take a deep breath with a mask on, a protective mask, take the mask off, say your name, your social security number, your rank, blah, blah, blah. And then you're standing there, and it's just eating you up, and your nose is running, your eyes are watering, and you feel like you can get stuff coming out of your ears even. But then you go outside, and you walk around the fresh air for 10 minutes, and you feel fine. OC spray, on the other hand, can take as much as an hour, hour and a half to decontaminate using lots of fresh, cool water. Not soap, not burn cream. You know, I had an incident where I had to stop two younger men from attacking an older gentleman, and I had pepper foam at the time, which was OC spray, but it was a foam delivery system. So when you sprayed somebody, you could almost hear the foam slapping them. And one young man that I sprayed with the foam ran, he wiped it off his eyes and ran away and into an apartment complex, and I couldn't chase him. And he had gone into his family's apartment, and his sister, trying to be helpful, had tried to wash his face with burn cream because he said his face was burning. And all that did was seal in the OC spray or the foam, and then he had to get clean, and it was a whole mess. Totally different thing, MACE versus OC. In my opinion, OC is much more devastating in its effect, but it's 100%. It's not a chemical weapon. Now, I've done all this babbling, Steve. We're down to 30 seconds. It doesn't seem like time went by that fast. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about OC, not much. We're going to move into the ECDs and then other use of force items, where we are, where we stand, all that good stuff. Sorry for babbling. I know you can see the countdown as well. Folks, call in if you have a comment, 866-404-6519, or send me an email. I'm still checking. I'm not getting anything. Join our conversation. Talk to you in a few.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com.
Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Folks, welcome back. We're going to get to Steve in just a minute. He told me he has a story about OC spray and decontamination. There's a report on Fox News that a police officer has been shot on Virginia Tech's campus in Blacksburg, Virginia. A second victim was reported in a campus parking lot. This is allegedly has just occurred. The suspect is a white male wearing gray sweatpants and a gray hat, neon green brim on the hat, traveling on foot near McComas Hall. For any of you all listening in Blacksburg, Virginia Tech area, there's an active campus alert in Blacksburg that the public transportation service has been suspended until the alert is lifted. Virginia Tech needs a break. This is a little bit ugly for them. So keep that police officer in your prayers. Mr. Ford, just tell me about your OC spray decontamination story.
Well, it's about 15 years ago, and back in those days, there wasn't a whole lot being taught about decontamination. It was, you know, getting fresh air and some water, you know, right, to put on it. And I had an incident where I ended up dumping an entire 4-ounce can of OC, ooh, you know, in the direction of the suspect. It was hitting other things, getting blown away. I got some splash back on me. And when all said, when everything was settled down, and then the fire department was called out to assist with decontamination, and they hadn't had any training whatsoever on OC decontamination.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, and they brought out a handful of 4x4 gauze pads. So prepared, all right, douse us with water, wipe up the arms, you know, to get it off. And unbeknownst to me, they poured alcohol onto it.
Ooh! I bet that didn't feel good.
No. In theory, you would think that the alcohol would cut the oil resin and would help. But no, it actually opened up the pores, allowing the OC spray to get into my skin even more.
Ooh!
And after about 2 hours of having a burning arm, I got the okay to go home, get cleaned up, and then return to duty. But that incident occurred about 6 o'clock in the evening, and I finally stopped feeling the effects of it about 1 a.m.
Wow, you have my sympathies. You know, one of the only things I think that's worse is when you go home thinking, okay, I'm going to get in the shower and clean everything off, and you take a nice warm shower, which opens all the pores up, and any OC that hasn't been washed off gets washed down your body, if you understand what I'm saying. Spreads yes. The effects. That's even worse. That's even worse. But, you know, as bad as it burns, and OC spray is called liquid hell for people who aren't familiar, and it earns its name. It's 100% non-injurious. There's no permanent injury from it. You know, so is it better to be hit with a baton, or is it better to be sprayed with OC? Is it better to be shot with a taser, which, again, no permanent injury aside from those little pinholes from the barbs if they get through the clothing? Is it better to be shot with a taser, or is it better to be shot with a gun? If you're the guy standing there with the knife, you know, take the taser shot rather than the gunshot. But let's talk about tasers for a minute. You know, taser is the biggest name in electronic control devices. There are other ones out there, such as Stinger. They operate by delivering an electric current that overrides the brain's conscious function of striated muscle tissue, causing those muscles to cramp. Like I said, I'm a taser instructor. I get been shot with this thing every other year. It totally sucks. But the injury risk is pretty low, stemming from dangers when either the subjects fall or they get muscle injury due to a cramping effect, similar to sports-related injuries. Are you a taser instructor, Steve?
I'm not a taser instructor, but I'm certified for taser use.
So you've been shot with a taser?
Yes, I have.
Shot, or just exposed with the probes dropped in your pocket or whatever?
I was shot.
Doesn't that feel lovely?
Oh, it's a wonderful feeling. And it hurts, you know, a little bit going in, but you don't really notice it actually entering or making contact with your skin. You feel that ride, you know, that extreme pain while you're taking that ride.
Right.
And that's a tremendous, you know, pain. But then getting those probes getting removed, that's another pain.
Yeah, pulling the barbs out sucks.
Yeah. It's
But, you know, I remember when they first came out and the media and the ACLU and so many people thought they were so cool. Nobody was ever going to have to get shot with a gun again. And here we are, you know, 20 years later and, you know, people are calling the mainstream media, ACLU, they're calling for the end of taser use or ECD use because they're calling it cruel and unusual and they want to ban them. Excuse me. It just amazes me how the story can change depending on what they've seen or what they haven't seen.
Right. They can't make up their minds on anything as it is, you know, but, you know, unless they've actually gone through it, how can they speak as to the actual effects? You know, they're taking what the media is saying and they're rolling off of that. You know, they need to sign that waiver and take the ride and see, you know, how it is. And then they can speak from a little bit of experience, you know, but until then, they need to keep
their
opinions.
That's a very pleasant thought, Steve. There's some people, there's some reporters that I would love to help educate by giving them a ride with a taser.
Yeah.
That would really brighten my day, in fact. All right. I'm taking a vote. How many cops listening to the show want a reporter that you'd like to shoot with a taser and let him take a 5-second ride? Raise your hand. Wait, don't. I don't want a whole bunch of cruisers wrecking on the side of the road. That would be funny as hell. I wonder if we could do that on national television. That would be great.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
That would be hilarious. Yeah. So anyway, I remember before the tasers, everybody thought we needed a better option. Now we have tasers. You know, you get people complaining about using them, and they do offer a different option. When you have the guy with the knife and you have two officers and one's got a gun and one's got a taser, understand something. For the folks listening that aren't in law enforcement, if the person has a knife, they are a lethal force threat. They can kill you. Therefore, our response is shoot them. If you have somebody, an officer there with a taser in his or her hand, they're trying to be nice. They're actively trying not to have to shoot someone with a gun. They're taking their life in their hands doing it, though. They're taking a risk. They need to have a brother or sister officer standing there with lethal force ready to go. So we have this choice now between less lethal or lethal. And understand that if we pull out a gun of any kind, revolver, pistol, shotgun, rifle, carbine, and when I say carbine, I mean a long gun that shoots a pistol caliber cartridge. We're trying, you know, we have all, if any of that we pull out, we pull the trigger, we've delivered potentially lethal force. With a taser, we have not. The taser is not a lethal force tool. It's never killed anybody. It's not dangerous to heart patients. It only affects striated muscle tissue. And like I said, I'm not a salesman for taser. It just eats me up when I see the news spread all this erroneous information. I'd rather get shot with a taser every day of the week and twice on Sunday than once with a gun. I'm sure Steve would agree with me.
Oh, yeah.
So in today's contemporary use of force, we've come a long way from the heyday of the Wild West where Wyatt Earp had his handgun and a shotgun. And it was a double-barrel shotgun at that. It wasn't even a pump-action 870. And my 870, for the record, folks, is 33 years old and still going strong. I'm loving it. Today's contemporary use of force, we have presence, which is just the officer showing up identifying himself. Verbal dialogue, which is conversations, what Steve and I are having. Verbal commands, where the police officer tells you what to do. Now, understand, if it's a lawful order and you disobey it, which is what happened at UC Davis with all those people, these protesters, these occupiers, they're getting lawful orders to evacuate an area. No, I'm not going to debate whether or not it's lawful. It came from a police officer who's following his orders. It's not a violation of your constitutional rights. It's a lawful order. That's a verbal command. Chemical irritants, we call them chemical even though they're organic now, OC spray. Soft empty hand, which is control holds and pressure points. I'm not hitting you, but I've got my hands on you. Hard empty hands, those are strikes. Those are elbow blitzes, punches, chops, kicks, knees. Electronic control devices. And sometimes those ECDs, tasers and stingers, they get placed way up before ever going hands on, just like the OC spray does. Because the minute a police officer closes distance and goes hands-on, then we have an increase of risk of injury to both the subject and the officer. So the officer's better off keeping his distance, delivering a completely non-lethal force method, the OC spray or the taser, and then handcuffing you while you're under the effects and then helping you get decontaminated or recover. Impact weapons and lethal force. that about cover everything in your experience, Steve?
Yeah, that covers everything.
When you get out of your car, do you have every one of those on your person when you get out of your cruiser?
Everything except for OC spray.
Why don't you have OC spray?
I used to carry it up until I started carrying the taser, and I just running out of space in my duty belt.
I won't make a comment about real estate on a duty belt. I think we probably have the same waist size. I hate to see somebody go without a force option that they could have, though. We'll have to next time we're actually in the same room, we'll have to examine your duty belt and see if we can find you space for an OC canister, and I'll get you one for Christmas. So you have everything except the OC spray. Understanding that, folks, if you listen to that list, the only tools are the taser or the ECD, rather, the electronic control device, the impact weapon, and a handgun. OC spray, if you carry it. Everything else on the belt is restraint device, handcuffs, or communications radio, or personal protection, gloves and such, or a weapon and spare magazines for that weapon, handguns and extra ammo. We're getting into near the end of this segment, and when we come back, Steve and I are going to talk more about the different kinds of handguns and some of the challenges we face with getting officers to engage. Steve, in your experience, and pay attention to the time limits for me, please, in your experience, do you see officers who are hesitant to go hands-on, and if so, is it because of a lack of confidence, or is it because they're worried about policy and lawsuit and all that?
I think it's a combination of the two. You know, so much of the in-service training is focused on the legal aspects opposed to keeping us, you know, current on the current tactics and keeping us freshened up on those tactics. And then there's the aspect of worrying about whether they're going to get sued or not, you know, for something that they do.
So you think they're just going in faster and faster circles in their head trying to figure out should I or shouldn't I and which one?
Right, right.
Okay. All right, folks, we're coming to the end of this segment. I'd like to encourage you again to call. Quit being shy. It's an 800 number, 866-404-6519. My radio show producer's laughing because you guys are shy and won't call. Or send me an email, frankborelli@officer.com. When we come back, we'll talk about firearms and some of the issues with engagement. Thank you for joining our show today. Talk to you in a few.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list, Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
It's time to capture the simple piece of the Amish in your own life. Amish Wisdom with Suzanne Woods Fisher. Thursday afternoons at 5, 4 Central. Each week, Suzanne will have conversations with guests about living a life that incorporates principles of the Amish without going Amish. She'll cover the practical, simplicity, slowing down, reducing clutter, putting the brakes on materialism. The historical, how have the Amish survived for 400 years? How can we hold on to what we hold dear? And the spiritual, treasuring important values, honoring the past, and increasing peace of mind. You don't have to become Amish to make personal peace a reality. Amish Wisdom will help all of us live a simpler life. For more information, go to SuzanneWoodsFisher.com. With Amish Wisdom, Suzanne offers us a glimpse into a world of peace, serenity, and total commitment to family and God. This show just might change the way you live your life. It's Amish Wisdom with Suzanne Woods Fisher. Thursday afternoons at 5, 4 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. The phone number to call in is 866-404-6519. You dial using the end of your index finger to push the button. I'm going to quit. I'm going to stop. Call in if you'd like, 866-404-6519, or send me an email, frankborelli@officer.com. Before we went to the break, we were just talking about officers and engagement and how sometimes they're hesitant to go hands-on. A lot of times it may be that they're worried about liability issues, or they're worried about whether or not policy is in place, or whatever they're worrying about. We have this big delay. And the delay is an engagement. And remembering that action's always faster than reaction. If the officers aren't acting, if they're reacting, then they're at a disadvantage in any kind of conflict. Steve, when you went through the academy, did you have to actually do hands-on engagements?
Yes, we did.
Give me an example.
So a lot of it was just going through the drills of learning how to do the wrist locks and the arm bars and all that. But then when it came down to putting those into actual use to show that you've learned what they are wanting you to learn, then, you know, generally it was the instructor getting in, you know, a protective suit like the red man suit or the fist suit, that
right,
so that they can be taking the knee shots to the leg and the punches and, you know, different strikes and all that to, you know, while we're trying to fight them off and take them to the ground and so on.
Well, did you have to wrestle or box other academy trainees, cadets?
No.
Okay. Did you go to the academy with folks who, for whatever reason, just couldn't? I mean, they wouldn't get on, they wouldn't engage, they wouldn't go hands on.
Yes, yeah, so some of them were a little bit shy about it. You know, not using as much force as, you know, what they actually could. You know, they're worried about breaking bones or whatever, and you know, it's like you get to know how much pressure you can put on somebody. You know, just by feel, you know, you put a wrist lock on, you know,
you got to do it to learn it.
Right. You know, and you can usually put a wrist lock on someone and pop their wrist and it's not going to break it. You know, in 18 years or so that I've been doing this, I haven't injured anyone. I haven't broken any bones or, you know, countless people have felt a tremendous amount of pain, but nobody has ever been hurt.
You know, for our listeners, let's delineate the difference, okay? If I feel pain, pain hurts.
Right.
Folks in the law enforcement world, hurt and injured are sometimes used synonymously, and I can put you in a lot of pain without delivering you any injury. You might get a bruise, you might be sore, but there's no muscle tissue damage, there's no sprains, there's no damage to joints. And I can't say the same thing as Steve has. I've put my fair share of people in the hospital, but every time I put somebody in the hospital, I had to go for treatment as well. It was just that kind of fight. But I did go to the academy, and as an instructor during several academy classes, I saw this. When people just wouldn't engage. They wouldn't use that force that was necessary because they were so worried or they weren't confident in their skills. And I was speaking to one of our previous guests earlier, a state police officer named Max. And Max made the observation that we grow up in such a sterilized environment today. Kids don't fight. And they work hard not to, and they get in trouble if they even defend themselves. There's no pushing contests. Unless you wrestle or box, there's nothing in your life growing up that prepares you for a physical conflict. Many kids today just have never been punched in the face. And, I mean, God, when I was growing up, every kid in the neighborhood had a bloody nose or a loose tooth. It was just part of growing up, and that's not true today. As a result, you get police officers who are afraid. They've never been punched in the face. They've never punched somebody in the face. And we're not supposed to on the street, folks. This is just conversation. They've never hit somebody. They've never done anything more than being a pushing contest. And so they're not used to the idea of putting their hands on people. Is that about right?
Oh, yeah. And I think some training courses out there also kind of shortchange the students. You know, I've moved around to different areas of the country and have gone through a couple different academies, and I've experienced that and seen it firsthand where they're just not pushing the students enough. And even if the students are doing the tactics wrong, they're still allowing them to proceed on until, instead of correcting it and making sure that they are doing it correctly, you know, it's like, we need more officers out there on the street, but we don't need more officers out on the street that don't know how to defend themselves and to, you know, protect themselves and their fellow officers. That's how we get dead cops.
And the public that we're tasked with protecting and defending as well.
Correct.
Protecting and serving, I should say. Protect and defend is a military role. My apologies. Well, and this was something else Max had said. You know, we go to the range. Most agencies, many agencies, go at least twice a year. Sometimes go 3, 4, 5, 6 a year. Officers go shoot on their own time. But we practice this delivery of lethal force, if you will, several times a year. When was the last time you had to swing your baton in a training class, Steve?
Probably 10 years ago.
A decade
actually,
ago.
Actually, probably the last time I taught a class.
Okay, last time you taught a class. Right. But then you weren't the trainee that had to practice that swing and the delivery of force using that tool.
Right.
When was the last time you went to taser class for recertification?
2 years ago.
You're due. Make it happen.
Yeah.
When was the last time you went to OC class to practice to recertify delivery of OC product?
About 10 years ago, other than teaching classes.
When was the last time you took a class on search and arrest procedures?
Last year.
Really? I'm impressed.
Yeah.
So you got to handcuff the instructor?
No, it was just classroom stuff.
Okay. Then I'll rephrase the question. When was the last time you took a class where part of your performance objectives were proper placement of handcuffs in a reduced amount of time?
7 years ago.
Okay. I'm impressed. I haven't done that since the academy, except for the instructor level training that I've done using those to perform those things.
Right.
But the point I'm making is, and that Max made, so thank you, Max, I give you credit for the statement. The point Max made was there's this complete inequality in what we practice. We practice shooting, but we don't practice all of the other hands-on stuff. And if our career goes as we really would like for it to go, we don't ever shoot anybody, but we go hands-on on a regular basis making arrests. Why is that? The answer is because there's a huge liability attached if we pull the trigger, not quite as big of a liability attached if we swing a baton, shoot, taser, spray with OC, or go hands-on. Is that a correct statement?
I would agree with it. The insurance liability is having to pay out, but in the same aspect, you know, if we're using empty hand techniques or whatever and we end up causing injury, whether it was justified or not, you know, that's put some liability back on us also, where, you know, the courts may say, yeah, you're justified, but your department isn't backing you up. You know, it's all a matter of training. We should be doing those other, you know, getting additional training in all of those different aspects and not just firearms.
I'll tell you something else. And we have, I don't know, a few minutes left in this show. I hadn't meant to bring this up, but I'm going to because it's applicable to the conversation. Here in Maryland, we have something called the Local Government Insurance Trust. And legit, God bless them, protects many a police officer, many an agency, many a municipality. But lawyers being what they are, when somebody files a lawsuit for excessive force against a police officer, an agency, the mayor, the chief, and everybody in the chain of command, and their dog, and they file a $5 million lawsuit, what they really want is $250,000, and they'll go away. So what happens is you have an insurance lawyer who sees this claim, this lawsuit, and then they measure what it's going to cost to defend against. And let's say they decide in their projections it's going to cost $234,000 to defend against this $5 million lawsuit. So they'll save money by half if they offer the guy $116,000 to go away and they settle it out of court. and it's a business decision to save money. Here's my challenge, and this is my big problem. By settling it out of court, they tacitly admit that the officer did something wrong, even though the officer didn't do anything wrong, and it could be successfully defended. They just wanted to save a buck. Have you seen that, Steve?
Oh, yeah. It happens every day, you know, across the country. You know, instead of, you know, saving face and, you know, saving the reputation of the department, the officers involved, they'll just settle, and they're just telling everyone, you know, without saying it, that the officer did wrong when they actually didn't.
All right, so we're on the same page, and I'm sure anybody listening or everybody listening would agree with us as well. We're in our last 2 minutes of the show, folks. Steve, thank you very much for joining us today. You know you make my show easier if I have somebody to talk to rather than having to do this myself. You also know me well enough that when it comes to use of force, I could babble on for hours and hours and hours and not have a challenge. So let me thank you for joining us today. Folks, we're going to have to do a different show, and Steve, I'm going to ask you to come back for another show. I wanted to talk about firearms and options and where we started and where we've come. You know, years back, and this was supposed to be part of our conversation today because it applied to lethal force. We just got involved in other stuff. We talked about wider revolver and double-barrel shotgun, and now we look today at the options that a police officer has as far as semi-automatic pistols. Revolvers are still out there, and some agencies actually still use them. Carbines, which are shoulder-fired pistol-caliber weapons. Rifles, true rifles. Shotguns, and then all the dedicated less lethal stuff. One of the funniest things I've ever seen, and I love it. It's a beautiful thing, but it's still funny looking to me, is a shotgun with neon orange foregrip and stock. Have you seen this, Steve?
Yes.
Dedicated less lethal shotgun. I wouldn't want it pointed at me because it's a 12-gauge, and it still is going to kill me when he pulls the trigger, and I know that in my heart. But I want to have a different show, talk about all the different firearms options. I'm going to invite Steve to come back for that show someday in the near future. State Trooper Max, if you're listening, I want to have you back for that show as well. And folks, I want to thank you for being here today. Steve, again, thank you for joining us today. Remember that you can download this as a podcast as soon as we get it archived. Remember that you can call in the future, 866-404-6519. Look online for more news about the shooting at Virginia Tech. Keep that police officer in your heart, in your prayers. Stay safe on the street. We will talk to you next week. This has been Officer Radio on Officer.com. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week, Officer Radio